Chapter 72. Yasna, 16. Yasna cursed to herself quietly, riding behind the galloping Tom toward the holy city of Jorvan. Lord Eniezer followed behind, looking very troubled. Their alliance was tenuous, their armies still poised to attack one another. "If you ruin this, madman," she thought threateningly. Eniezer's willingness to join with her, at the simple price of allowing himself to be conquered, was an unforeseen and remarkable boon. His men were obviously well trained, and were numerous enough to be a great help to her brother. During the negotiations, it had been all she could do to keep herself from gasping at her remarkable good fortune. If Eniezer had known how desperate they were, that they had not come to recruit him, but had arrived by happenstance. She didn't even want to think about her brother and Dalinar being at war. What could have convinced her stoic uncle to start a civil war? Her brother must have done something terrible indeed. Either that, or Dalinar had discovered Elokar's ruse to frame Jezenrosh. Either way, she had to get back before King Avan destroyed them both. And Tal'n's recklessness was threatening it all. Unfortunately, there was little she could do beyond follow him, trying to catch up. Behind, she could hear Meridas explaining about Tal'n's madness to Eniezer. The despot fortunately accepted the explanation, chuckling as he praised Yasna for finding an actual lunatic to be her false herald. The ease with which he accepted her willingness to deceive people in order to gather troops was chilling, especially since she knew he was absolutely correct in his assumption. Eniezer was a harsh man, but men worse than he had made good leaders. She knew Elokar would have no trouble granting Eniezer a title, for the move would give Alethkar control of the Remak Garnet mines. Dalinar might have more trouble accepting the despot, but he would feel bound by Yasna's promise. Those eventualities, however, assumed that either one still lived. Yasna sighed, urging her horse faster. Ahead, Tal'n had slowed as he entered the city itself. He had his shard blade out, and he paused for a moment, holding it. Then he took off again, guiding his horse across shattered streets and around fallen statues. Yasna followed, as did Eniezer, Meridas, and both honor guards. The holy city itself, what little she was able to see of it as she rode past, wasn't very impressive. Most of it was covered with cromstone, leaving whatever details had been left in the rubble covered with a thick rock skin. It was like a city melted, an area filled with giant waxy lumps. A few buildings still stood, however, and Tal'n made for one of these. She caught up to him as he reached a large pillared structure that betrayed very little decay, all things considered. "Tal'n," she called, but he ignored her, swinging off his horse and rushing into the building. She cursed, climbing off her beast with a less adroit scramble, then followed him into the building. The inside was dark and smelled of old stone. Though cromstone-coated windows and piled at their bases, most of the enormous hallway still stood intact. Ornate pillars disappeared into the depths above, and massive marble blocks made up the floor stones. The hallway had been stripped of anything worth carrying, but a few broken statues stood at its ends, their shattered faces staring through sunlit, dusty air. Tal'n's footsteps echoed from in front of her. She dashed behind him, her masculinely cut clothing letting her move far more quickly than her usual courtly shuffle. She was puffing by the time she reached the end of the large corridor. A room rose around her, as grand in proportion as the hallway that led to it. It had also been robbed of finery, but its dominant features still stood untouched. 10 enormous statues stood along the walls of the circular chamber, their height making her gape in amazement. She had heard stories of the legendary Ilin Shenton, one of the wonders of epic kingdom glory. She hadn't realized the magnificent statues still stood. She recognized each one, of course. She had been trained in Vorin teachings as a child. Balear's Soul Song, the Timeless. Jezrian's Storm Rider, the King. Vedal Key Watcher, the Else Smith. Nail's Sun Eyes, the Just. Shalessa Ashmaker, the Scatterer. Kavazaran Light Call, the Healer. Prael Smoke Wish, the Discerning. Chanaral Bond Seal, the Maker. Ishar Holy Dawn, the Sacred. And Talanel Stone Sinew, the Steadfast. Taln stood in the cavernous room, staring up at the statues as if in a trance. Then he looked down at his shard blade. Taln fell to his knees and plunged his blade into the stone at his feet. She could hear his harsh breathing as if he were weeping, but there were no tears. The others arrived a few moments later, and Meridas made to step forward, but Jasnah held out a hand to stop him. They stood in silence, watching Taln attack the ground with a random vengeance, muttering to himself, his blade throwing up chunks of stone as he worked. Jasnah could see the wildness in his eyes, the confusion, the despair, and the danger. This was not a time to confront him. Perhaps he's finally realized the truth, she thought, though seeing his tortured face, she could find no joy in the concept. He's been forced to admit his delusions. What if he couldn't accept the truth? What if his mind snapped? His echoing mumbles gave her a chill. What if she had destroyed him by bringing him here? Would not the delusional but functional Taln be better than a man who had broken? She cursed her own lack of sensitivity. She should have tried to help him, should have led him away from Joravan and the confrontation it represented. Instead, she had come eagerly, anticipating the satisfaction of proving herself right and Taln wrong. Her heart broke with his at the empty room. Suddenly, she didn't want him to know. Didn't want him to have to be disappointed. Ahead, Taln stopped digging. He knelt in the hole he had dug with his maddened swinging. Chunks of stone gathered around the lip. His head was barely visible over the rubble. She approached quietly. Taln? She asked. When he looked up, she didn't see the madness or the frenzy she had expected. Instead, she saw only confused, tired grief. Taln stood and slammed his shard blade into the stone before her. Except, it wasn't his blade. He held his own weapon beside him. The new blade was beautiful and ornate, not a blank, but a blade with swirling designs, like the fringes of curling mist. Taln looked down at the new sword with wearied eyes.
It was Jezrian's, he said with a haunted voice. I can feel the other eight buried here as well.
He looked up, meeting her eyes.
My brethren are dead. This time, mankind must face the Hothan alone.
They appear to be tombs of some sort, my lady,
Kemnar said. They stood at the mouth of the massive chamber. Men worked inside, cutting with shard blades to search for any further prizes hiding beneath the stone.
The passage slopes downward, and so the rainwater that got through the hallway windows here would have pooled in the statue chamber. The Crom stone there is dense, several feet thick. It appears that there were 10 caskets set into the floor's brickwork. 9 of them had blades in them. 1 was empty.
The empty one, Jasnah said. How did he get the blade out?
There were a lot of cracks in the floor, Kemnar said, from a quake or other disturbance. Most of the sarcophagi were broken as well. We didn't look too hard before we began cutting, but it's possible one of the cracks went all the way down to the blade chamber. Anyway, the swords have been here a long, long time, probably since the Epic Kingdoms, most definitely since before Remak fell. It would take centuries for this much Cromstone to build up.
Jasnah nodded. Taln sat inside the room, watching the work with dull eyes. Meridas and Aniezer stood at the side, supervising. She clenched her jaw as she saw them. She hadn't been paying enough attention to Meridas since the discovery. He was already becoming too close to the despot lord for her tastes.
"These blades are strange, my lady," Kemnar noted, drawing her attention again. "None of their opals are black, yet they hold their forms anyway. They should have reverted to blanks long ago. They change like any other blade if we put a bonded opal in them, but there's still something odd about them."
Jasnah nodded. "Knock all of the clear opals off, but keep a hold of them. And keep digging. There might be more blades to be found."
Kemnar nodded. "It isn't likely we'll find more, though. None of us can feel whatever it is that Taln claims lets him sense the blades. And we've already dug up the 8 he said were here."
"Keep going anyway," Jasnah requested, leaving Kemnar behind and walking over to join Meridas and Aniezer. The despot lord regarded the excavation with troubled eyes, obviously uncertain how to react. He had been sitting on one of the greatest treasure finds in the history of modern Roshar, and never known it.
9 shard blades. A man could have found mythic Lura itself and not been so well rewarded.
"As a token of goodwill, Lord Aniezer," Jasnah said, "I grant you 1/2 of the blades we have discovered. Find 4 good men to bear them."
The wild-haired man regarded her through narrowed eyes.
"Yes, Aniezer," Jasnah said in a suffering tone. "I know you could kill us and take all of them for yourself. But what would that really gain you? Our several positions have not changed since our negotiations, and you still want membership in Alethkar. If you do become a lord, you will have to grow accustomed to the fact that you have superiors, if just a few of them. Sometimes they will make decisions you don't agree with. Part of having a title is honoring it, following your betters even when you are dissatisfied." Aniezer regarded her for a moment longer, then smiled.
"You are an impressive woman, Lady Jasnah," he finally decided. "I see why Lord Meridas chose you to be his bride."
"Lord Meridas did not choose me," Jasnah corrected. "That is something else you'll have to accustom yourself to. In civilized lands, women arrange the marriages. Learn quickly, I suggest, since I hear that you are unwed. The court women won't long let a powerful lord such as yourself go unmatched, and you will need heirs."
Aniezer shrugged. "I have heirs," he said. "Just no wife to go with them."
"You'll need legitimate heirs, Lord Aniezer," Jasnah said. "You are an Aleth nobleman now. You will need to learn to act like one." Aniezer just smiled again. Jasnah left him, picking her way through the rubbled room and around the exhumed sarcophagi to where Taln sat alone at the feet of a massive statue.
"Taln?"
she asked gently, kneeling beside him. He sighed deeply. He had been despondent since the discovery earlier in the day. Night was quickly approaching now, and the men worked by lantern light.
"Something has gone very wrong, Jasnah," he said softly. "I've known it since the return began. The failure of the sign, the unresponsiveness of my Na'el bond, my missing powers, and now my brethren. They're connected, all of these problems. Something went wrong 1,000 years ago, but I wasn't there to see what. I died too early."
"Taln, you're not dead," she said. "You're right here." Taln shook his head.
"We all die, every time, Jasnah. Either we die at Huthan hands or our own. We can't stay in this world, not for very long. Sometimes we can remain for several decades. But we always have to go eventually. There are reasons we cannot be here. I died early last time, defending the keep of Velital, as your legends explain. I often die early, since I do the most fighting. Regardless, I never saw the end of the return last time. Something must have happened after I died. The book I took from your library, it claims that the Ilin declared the cycle of returns broken. I don't believe that is possible. Even if it were, I would be dead right now. He paused, nodding toward the room before them. This was a place of men. We never asked for it, but they built it anyway, to put our bodies in each return after we died.
But, Yasna said, there aren't any bodies in the caskets. No bones or anything. Just the blades. Tal shook his head.
There wouldn't be bodies, he said. When heralds die, their bodies turn into smoke after a time. The songs teach of that, do they not?
Songs she had always thought of and still thought of as silly. Still, he had his mythology right. Look, maybe you're overreacting, she said. Perhaps they're not dead. Maybe they just never came to get their swords. She couldn't believe what she was saying, that she was feeding his delusions so. But if it brought back the Taln she knew...
No, Taln said. It doesn't work that way. When we are reborn in the other world, our blades come to us. That is what the opals are for. The summoning and dismissing of blades is an improvement mankind devised. When a herald dies, his blade goes with him to the next world. When he returns, it comes to Roshar with him. How do you think I got my blade back when I returned?
And you didn't know the blades allowed you to sense only where the other blades were? Not where the other heralds were? Yasna asked. Taln shook his head.
You'd think that would come up over the centuries, but it didn't. We are never without our blades, Yasna. That's the other reason I know that my brethren didn't abandon them here. Our powers are tied to our swords. They are part of us. We don't just leave them behind.
You say that the heralds never leave their blades behind. Yet here they are, Yasna said. You claim the blades go with them when they die, but they haven't. So they can't either be alive or dead. Don't you see how circular this is?
Tal nodded. And that is what has me confused. Like I said before, something must have happened at the end of the last return. I was the first to die. If something happened to the Na'el bond after I left, perhaps, I don't know. Maybe my brethren aren't in either world. Maybe they really are dead. Killed somehow. Permanently.
And this, she sensed, was what made him so depressed. He had worked through it all on his own already. He had arrived at the same double dead end and worried that the other heralds, men he knew of only in his delusions, but who were real to him nonetheless, were all dead.
Wouldn't you have seen them in the dwelling? Yasna said. During the times between returns? Didn't you ever wonder what happened to them?
Taln shook his head.
Things are complicated on the other side, Yasna. I wouldn't have known if they came back or not. I assumed that they did, but I don't know.
He turned toward her, haunted.
I'm the only one left. Even if they are alive somewhere, I'm the only one who came for this return. Mankind only has me. They needed brilliant, intelligent leaders, but they received only Talanel.
This time Yasna spoke honestly. Taln, you do yourself injustice. What do you think you are? An idiot of some sort? You've a clever mind, far more intelligent than most of the men I've known. Why must you insist on self-deprecation?
No self-deprecation, Yasna, Taln said. Just truth.
3,000 years has taught me some things, but the others, they are brilliant, Yasna. Ishar wrote all 10 arguments and founded a religion. Chanaral designed the Oath Gates and the Shard Blades. Bajardun wrote the Way of Kings primarily based on the things he learned from Jezrian. Nail gave the Su'urd their code, which became the standard of law throughout Roshar. The others weren't just men, but geniuses, every one. Listen to their names. Lightcall, Discerning, Holy Dawn, Timeless. What am I? Talinel, the Steadfast. That's what I've always been. Reliable and stalwart, but not a leader. I'm no man of great wisdom. I'm just a warrior. That's why I was so eager to come find the others. They know what to do, how to organize mankind. Without them...
Self-pity will serve you nothing, Tarn, Yasna said. You're too quick to judge. Maybe the others left their swords here for good reason. Maybe they never died last time. Maybe they're still out there somewhere. You haven't really looked yet. They may not even know you're back. Tarn sighed.
It is not self-pity I feel, Yasna. 3 millennia have helped me learn to avoid sullenness. However, the time has also taught me a few things about the Hothan. The odds are not good. We have 1 herald instead of 10, and the few people who have come to know me best since the return began still think I am insane. One cannot consider such difficult events without some measure of sorrow.
She wasn't sure how to respond to that. Tarn, she said, come back with me. Come to Alethkar and forget about your failure. It doesn't matter. Forget about your insanity. It wasn't that easy. Instead, she asked, do you intend to continue with us? He shook his head.
I don't know, he said. I will have to consider it. Things are troubling.
She didn't press him, though she wanted to. It wasn't her place. Hers was in Alethkar, in a union that brought her power. Icy, comfortless power, with the snide man who stood on the other side of the room, watching her and Tarn with the unveiled rage of jealousy. So she left Tarn sitting in the room, below the statue of a massive, muscular man, with a chiseled face and heroic expression. Tarn the man, sitting at the feet of Talinel, the legend. The aggregate army left Jorvan the next morning. Eniezer was impressed to discover that they had an awakener, and it seemed to increase their standing with him. He offered to share some of his equipment with Yasna's men, and she accepted gratefully, though she suspected Meridas had something to do with the offer. Either way, Eniezer saw that each of her men at least had a spear, if not a metal cap, and leather jerkin. There were even some shields to spread around. The despot lord and Meridas rode together, and Yasna had trouble thinking of a reason to command otherwise. Still, she was suspicious of Meridas's motives. If Elokar and Dalinar really had gone to war, she had little doubt as to which side Meridas would be on. That put him and her at odds even more soundly, since she would back Dalinar in the conflict. However, for the moment, there was a greater threat. She could only hope that her uncle and brother had realized that fact and now resisted the invaders together. Tarn rode alone, rebuffing even Lan's attempts at conversation. He didn't leave the army, though Yasna still feared that he might. When asked directly, he implied that he hadn't decided whether to help her in Alethkar or not, claiming that the disputes of nations were none of his concern. The army was still vaguely under Tarn's banner, though Eniezer's troops were not religious zealots, but instead battle-hardened soldiers. Eniezer himself had agreed to visibly accept Tarn's claim as a herald. This didn't change many of his men's attitudes. They followed because they believed that their lives would improve greatly once they were accepted as Alith's citizens. But it did give a strong measure of legitimacy to Jasnah's recruitment efforts. In addition, the more believing part of Jasnah's forces were quick to tell stories of how Taln had singly defeated 1,000 men and had saved so many in Ral Aram. Slowly, his reputation even with Eniazar's soldiers began to swell. Jasnah now had two methods of persuading men to join her banner. They could either come to fight for the herald they had heard rumors of, or they could join in the hopes of earning a higher citizen rank when Eniazar's cities were folded into Alethkar. The combined prongs aided them greatly in gathering forces, especially in Eniazar's tribute cities. Soon, their army was approaching 6,000 in number, and Shale, their awakener, had to work constantly to provide grain to supplement what they could get from trade and foraging. Despite her success in recruitment, however, Jasnah rode with frustration. She worried for Alethkar. If Elokar and Dalinar had gone to war over the throne, then King Avan could have exploited their weakness, taking both armies when they were already fatigued. Most of the cities in Alethkar would be undefended, and supplies would be scarce. She worried about the people she knew. Who of her family still lived? What of Dalinar's sons? Did Alethkar even still stand? Or was she bringing her army to the certain death of a conquered kingdom? Taln worried her as well. Despite his noble words about avoiding sullenness, he looked like he was doing a fair job of moping. She didn't know if it was because he thought his herald's dead, or if there was a deeper reason. One derived from his failure to prove his delusions. Perhaps this was the time to press him, to make him confront his insanity. Yet, what if his mind couldn't take that much stress? She wanted him back, but he would barely speak to her. He rode staring into the distance, his mind working on problems she could only guess at. They approached the border to Alethkar, their scouts warned to watch for organized resistance. They found none. The villages they soon located knew nothing other than that Lord Dalinar had ridden to battle some weeks before. Whatever was happening in the center of the kingdom, it hadn't reached such insignificant locations. So they turned their bulky trail along the northern Chamavan Ridge, a line of stormlands that pointed directly east. At their current marching speed, they would reach Kolinar in less than a week. There, Jasnah hoped to find answers.